I also went to a notebook store yesterday. It was nothing but like notebooks. You would have loved it. They sold black wings and everything.
Did you just go scribble in random notebooks so that when people got them home, they would be like, God damn it, just to mess with people?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, hey, it's not Tuesday. Your ears are not deceiving you. Bill is back from, I almost said the Great White Way, but that's where you kind of live near anyway.
Yeah.
Great White North. Yeah. So it's Friday. Will the show go up today? It'll go up Friday,
yeah,
right?
It'll go up.
All right. So it's Friday, the 20th of October. Episode 286 of On Taking Pictures. We got a lot to talk about. Bill Wadman in Brooklyn, Jeffrey Sidoris in Silver Spring.
Yeah, we don't just have 7 days of stuff to talk about. We have 10 days of stuff to talk about.
So, yeah, as they say in the WWF, let's get it on.
Is that what they say now? Because they can't say the Rumble thing. Because the guy
owns the copyright on that, right? Let's get ready to Rumble, whatever his name is.
Oh, geez, Jeffrey. Now we got to pay the guy.
Do we really? No, only if you say it in a certain way.
Oh, is that true?
I think.
So if you're...
But we were commenting, Rumble. I think it's okay. Let's get ready to razzle dazzle. I don't know. That doesn't have the same effect, huh?
No, doesn't quite work.
Yeah, the old razzle dazzle.
It's the old razzle dazzle.
I want to be Richard Gere. No.
so fun. All right. So what's happened while I was out of the country?
Nothing. We're still just as screwed up as when you left.
Great.
Maybe more so.
Great. Super. hey, you know what's interesting? I started watching. We ended up, in the Airbnbs that we were in Montreal and in the hotel we were in Quebec, and we had access to, one of them had a Chromecast and one of them had a Roku. Now, okay.
Both similar devices from what I understand, yes?
Yeah, well, Chromecast, you use your phone to cast to the thing, and then the Roku is like a Apple TV, right?
Okay.
And when you're up there, it's funny, when you leave the US and you notice the streaming stuff is all completely different, right? You can't connect to, say, HBO because you're in Canada, so I couldn't connect to HBO now. I was an American member. You see all these like crazy things, right?
Right.
Including
licensing limitations.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we use Netflix and we watched this Mindhunter show.
Oh, sure. Fincher's new thing.
Yeah. Have you watched it?
I have not. I was finishing up another show.
Okay.
Gotham.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's hard.
Okay. You shouldn't have admitted that to thousands of people right now.
It's not good, but I had to see what happened, and then it's just...
I get it.
It never got any better.
The Mindhunter thing is, it was fine. I mean, it was good. It wasn't, like, exceptional, but I thought it was quite good. The guy who plays one of the serial killers in it that they go interview is amazing. Anyway, we watched that, and then we were looking for something else to watch, and we ended up watching Fargo, which I hadn't seen, the TV show version.
Yep. I understand it's very good. Nope.
Okay.
I've seen the film, but I understand the show is terrific. I've not seen it.
The thing is, I was never a fan of the film. Like, I've seen it, but I didn't particular... It didn't have any particular effect on me. I didn't... I was like, fine. I know people love that movie, so I was a little bit...
cult classic, right?
Yeah, so I was always a little bit... about the TV show, but the TV show is both beautiful and very well done. Extremely beautiful shot.
Did you not like Fargo the film because you didn't like the film, or are you not a fan of the Coen brothers as a rule? Do you not like the Coens directing?
Well, that's funny. It's funny you should ask that, because there are Coen brothers movies that I do like. I am not a huge fan of... of what's it called? What's the one that everyone loves? I don't like Raising Arizona. I wasn't particularly excited about Big Lebowski, but I did like Hudsucker Proxy. I did like what's the one? No Country for Old Men was good, but I don't want to watch it again.
Very different from their normal fare.
Yeah. I also liked I liked True Grit, although I didn't love True Grit. So yeah, there are movies that I really like of theirs, and there's ones that I don't really like of theirs. So it's very hit or miss. What's the one with the in the South with
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. Okay. So did I say that one already? Okay.
No. You don't like that one?
No, I did like that one. Yeah. I like that one.
I love that movie.
There's one other
one. I even liked The Lady Killers, even though like it was not.
Oh, see, I didn't watch that one.
I thought Hanks was just his affectations were pretty funny.
Inside Llewyn Davis, I thought was beautiful. I thought that was a really nice film. And I thought that Oscar Isaac did an excellent job of looking like he knows how to play and sing. Anyway, so I was a little, yeah. So I didn't like Fargo. Just, I don't know, the tone of it, I didn't really like. It's funny, black comedies I'm not a huge fan of as a general rule. Hmm. And I guess there's some black comedy element of the TV show, but it's a little bit different. Anyway, the point of it is that you should go watch Fargo if you haven't, even as a photographer, just because it's beautifully shot and very well done.
See, and that's typically, that's one of the things that I like about their films is they each kind of capitalize on, or not capitalize on, they each manage to create a unique visual style that is sort of self-contained.
Yeah, you're probably right. So, and that's the thing about like Llewyn Davis feels like 1960s somehow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this show, it was all shot with Ari Alexas, and there's something about the tonality of it. I mean, obviously the color timing, the color treatment after the fact is beautifully done, but
Yep.
There's just something about the dynamic range of it that just has a certain feel to it. Anyway, so go watch that. But funny thing is, so we watched 7 episodes of it on Netflix up there, and then we get home and I go on Netflix and it's not on Netflix in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It used to be.
Right. It was, I think, up until very recently, but it wasn't yesterday. So we had to go on Hulu to watch it because now it's only apparently on Hulu in America. Ugh. And luckily, Heather had a Hulu account from watching Handmaid's Tale or something. Anyway.
What a racket, that whole licensing thing.
That's the reason I brought it up, is just that it's insane how crazy licensing is around the world, which sets us up for our first little topic here.
Our first little topic. Do tell.
So while I was away, my phone, I was using, quick little tangent before we get to to that thing. I borrowed Cisco's X100T.
Oh yeah. Okay. The T. He's got the T.
For the trip. Yep. Yeah.
And
Way faster and better than the S.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine the F is even better.
Yeah. The F is supposed to be even better. Well, F is also a new sensor.
The 24 megapixel one.
And the T share the same sensor as the original, the first one.
And yours.
Yeah.
That was great. I even in times liked the EVF. Just getting used to the EVF, it was like there were times when I liked it, although the results that you get on, you know, when you actually look at the picture on like a real screen versus what you see in the EVF is a little off, but it was nice for trying to figure out when things are blown out and blah, 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 blah. So it was the first time I've used an EVF that I didn't want to throw up. So anyway, so there's that. But one of the cool things about it was and I don't think your camera does this, the Wi-Fi stuff?
Oh, no. Okay. No.
So there's Wi-Fi built into the camera, and you connect to the phone, your phone to the Wi-Fi in the camera.
Right, like a little ad hoc connection.
Yeah. And then you, there's an app that you download, and then you say, I want to receive pictures from the camera, and all of a sudden the camera goes into a different mode where you can flip through the pictures, and every time you hit OK, it sends that picture full res to the phone.
Does it send the JPEG, or does it send a DNG, or what
it sends the JPEG, I'm 99% sure, but you get, if you shot RAW, you could process the RAW separately as, you know, with different, are they called on Fuji? The camera
film, like the film presets,
film simulations. Okay. Yeah.
Film simulations.
So you could, you know, reprocess it, and then you bring it in. And of course, I mean, there's a little bit of latitude in a JPEG, so you can pull up the shadows a little or do whatever you want to do. But that turned out to be very handy for my purposes because I was taking pictures and then needed to post one that day. So I processed everything on my phone, which I usually on my Pentax use the little, SD card to lightning thing. Yeah. Anyway.
So you didn't bring your 645Z. You nope. only brought the Fuji.
I only brought the Fuji and my phone. I did all those. Okay, on
so
Fuji
for those of
phone.
You who have been following along Bill's 365 project, yeah. the last how many? Seven full seven.
Seven
days?
Or eight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seven Although, or 8 days are
back to a black and white guy at a sandwich shop. We're okay, all done so. On. Yeah, the guy at the sandwich shop, Eric Fournier. So the last, you know, the last eight. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the last seven are Fuji. X100S rather T. than or T T I'm
yeah.
sorry T
yeah. Yeah. So anyway,
I love the color in the shot of Millie. Love that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the green's really. I mean, look, the Fuji has that thing that you know people like the Fuji for, and I processed a little bit in post. But
I like the shot on the train. The guy yeah. on the train. That's nice.
Yeah, that guy was pretty cool. He was the conductor of the train, and he took me into an empty car in the back. It was kind of cool. And that wall behind the guy, the French guy, Genevieve.
Yeah, great texture.
Oh God, it was amazing. At this wall at this restaurant, and this guy was sitting next to us. I'm like, excuse me, I do this thing. Could you? And he's like, yeah, sure. He was from Paris.
Yeah, see, too bad you didn't have your 645. You could have shot that and then just printed a giant picture yeah, of it and used it as a background.
Don't think I didn't think of that. anyway, the point of all this is to say that the Wi-Fi thing is really great. And I was using Lightroom to process the images a little bit before I brought them into Instagram.
On the phone or on an iPad? Or on
the phone.
On the phone, yeah.
Yeah. And so the one thing I don't think that when you process something in Instagram before you post it, like if you mess around with any of the sliders or whatever, yeah. it does save a version back to your camera roll when you post it. But I don't know that that version is high res or not. I don't think I've ever checked.
I would imagine it's the
resolution that it,
what, 1084 or whatever
yeah,
it is across.
Yeah, I got to double check. Anyway,
I don't know.
So I was doing a lot of work in Lightroom. And so during my trip, my apps updated and suddenly I get this new version of Lightroom on my phone where the interface is completely different. Like the next day I start up Lightroom. I'm like, oh, let me work on this image. And it's like a completely different thing. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Right.
Only to find out that Adobe launched this whole new Lightroom initiative in the last week while I was away.
Right.
So I got this new version of the mobile version, and then there's a new version on the desktop. And what was Lightroom before is now Lightroom Classic?
Yeah. Okay. So they've apparently discontinued Lightroom 6, that branch, the right. standalone perpetual right. license version, no more. Right. Despite them for years saying that it would be available as long as Lightroom
was being developed for years.
Yeah, yeah, it would be developed in parallel. So right. Adobe has decided, and look, this is probably not a big shock. They're making money hand over fist.
Sure.
With Creative Cloud.
Look, here's the thing. I like the idea of a perpetual license. I think you and I do just from we've been dealing with software for the last 40 years of our lives or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is part of me that's like, well, if I'm using this thing all the time and I buy it once for whatever it is, and then like I expect all these updates.
I get it.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the promise has lived up to the reality. They've promised more stability. They've promised better features more often. Yep. And those two things have not happened.
I tend to agree with you. But on principle, I'm not one of those people who's like, how dare you turn over to a subscription model?
No, everything's a choice going subscription, whether it's software or content yep. or, you know, whatever it is.
But then again, that's the problem, is that everything's going subscription. So now instead of spending whatever it is, now you're spending, you know, $70 a month on
right.
three television on stations and Photoshop. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Everything is $70 a month. Whatever you're doing, it's $70
right,
a
right,
month.
Right, right. And so, right. So they've gotten rid of the Lightroom 6, which was different than Lightroom CC that came with the subscription, or wasn't different? Was getting the same updates?
I don't know. I've only got a 6 license.
Okay.
I did not upgrade to Lightroom, and I will probably, you know, I will probably stick. I've recently upgraded to Capture One, so I think I will stick with Capture One.
Right. It all depends on your workflow and what you're trying to do, and that's what I want to get to in a second.
Yeah.
So what was Lightroom CC is now Lightroom Classic CC.
Correct.
Which is the old Lightroom you know and love, written in whatever, Nuo or Nua. Remember it was like written Lua. And so that's still going on in parallel, called Classic CC. They say they will keep that in perpetuity or for a long time too.
For the next 18 to 24 months.
Well, yeah.
Till they decide to kill it off.
And they've launched the new version of Lightroom CC, which is a completely different app in many ways.
Yeah.
Designed,
all cloud-based.
Well, okay, so that's the thing. Okay, so right. if you pay the $10 a month photography thing that I currently have, which is Photoshop and Lightroom, you now get Photoshop, Lightroom, and Lightroom Classic if you want it. And you get, I think it's 20 or 50 gigs of space on the Adobe servers.
Right.
If you just sign up for Adobe Light, the new Lightroom CC program without Photoshop, you get a terabyte of space on the servers plus the new version of Lightroom.
Right.
Now, the reason why this is all cool, theoretically, is that you import images into Lightroom, the new version of Lightroom. They will get backed up to the cloud and all their settings, and the tools will be have parity between the mobile version and your desktop version. The idea being that you could bring stuff into your mobile, it'll upload them to the cloud, you can work on them, you get home, they're already there, all your settings are already there, like the whole thing synced back and forth over the cloud.
Right.
It's a very, very, very different way of working than we've all been working so far the last few years.
If it works.
If it works.
Yeah. But as is pointed out on this terrific article on Imaging Resource,
yep,
which is called "It's Time to Stop Living Under the Illusion Adobe Cares What You Think." there's a little exchange. Adobe, okay, here you go. We added HDR and panorama stitching. Photographers, I mean, those two features are really great, but now the program isn't any faster. Some of us are even experiencing it slower. Adobe, oh, okay, we added dehaze. Photographers, I mean, thanks. That's also a really cool feature, but we still want it faster. Even
right.
more of us are experiencing unprecedented lag and wait times. Please make it faster.
Right.
Adobe, check this out. Now you can edit your photos on your iPad. It's Lightroom Cloud. You can start editing a photo on your desktop, do more edits with your iPad, then go back to it on your desktop. Photographers, are you even listening? I don't think any of us actually wanted that, and none of us actually use it the way you're describing it.
Right.
Seriously, we would totally be happy if the only update you added next was just a speed improvement.
Right. Okay, I agree with what they're saying from the point of view of me as me using Lightroom as my main thing as a professional photographer.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they are doing is the new version of Lightroom. I played with it a little bit last night, so I don't have extensive stuff with it. But you install it, you open it up, and it doesn't have all of your old stuff in it. You have to manually bring your old stuff into it if you want
to
do that.
You get to tailor the workflow to kind of how you work.
Right. And you, it's not like, oh, all of a sudden, all of my images on my disk, I can just go through them like you did on your catalog on your old one. It's sort of a different system that's based. There's a My Photos section. You can create albums, but My Photos includes all of my photos. And then you can look at it by date and recently added segments. And
okay, here's my question, though, Bill.
Yep.
You're a medium format shooter,
yep,
shooting what, 50 megapixels? How big are your
files? They're big. They're 65 megs a piece.
65 megabytes each.
Per image, yeah.
Uncorrected, unedited. That's just the raw image.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, who's bringing those kinds of files over to edit from their 27 or larger inch screen to their iPhone 8?
Yeah. Well, that is a good question, which...
Even an iPad Pro. Who is going from 27 to 12? I don't get it.
I think
I'm going to go to a coffee shop and edit this on my iPad because I can.
Right. Okay. So the current version, the way it is right now, feels a lot like an Adobe version of Apple Photos.
Okay.
That's what it feels like. So
yep,
there's the tools on the right, and then there's your My Photo stream on the left, essentially.
Right.
Last 20 gigs of it that can fit are up on the cloud, or terabyte if you buy the other thing, or you can buy more space if you really want all your stuff up on the cloud. I think what this is for is for the casual person, not casual. I don't mean that as a derogatory term, but like the person who is using Lightroom, wants Lightroom everywhere, wants their images everywhere. And this is them building the next generation for the next generation of users. It feels to me, Jeffrey, like Final Cut 10 versus Final Cut 7, where they're not worried about the market of people who have 50 megapixel medium format cameras that are moving giant 70 meg raw files back and forth.
They're looking at the 16 and 24 megapixel folks
who are shooting JPEGs, who are, you know what I'm saying? Or shooting raw and only need the last shoot that they're doing. I mean, just the organizational system in the current thing. And I have not played with it enough to really understand. Maybe there's kinds of tools that I don't understand, you know, that I haven't figured out yet, but it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that I would use to organize the way that I normally think about organizing. But the way I think about organizing is putting stuff in folders and keeping everything neat.
Right.
The top of the interface, Jeffrey, is a big giant search all photos box. It's a web browser, essentially, for your images, right? And it does all kinds of...
And what is it searching for? Do you give it criteria to search for individually, or does it search title, metadata?
You can do metadata, star-based, you know, checks.
Ratings,
ratings and all that kind of stuff. That's like within your all photos. But like, I would never, ever want to see all photos,
right?
Like, I don't think that way. I don't work that way. I will say, however, I did bring in... You know, a shoot I did a couple weeks ago. I just said, all right, grab these 100 raw files. Let me just see what they look like in here. Not only is the processing, the interface faster, like the whole thing of using the sliders and stuff is way better. And sort of what are the things in Lightroom? God, it's been so long. Organize and develop. What's the first one?
The modules. So there's library, develop.
Okay. So the library and develop are now sort of merged. So you're basically flipping through your files and you can make changes on them. You don't have to jump
many people were clamoring for from the very beginning.
Right. Which is a limitation, I think, of the way they designed the whole thing in the beginning with the modules, right? Like probably for coding reasons or for performance reasons 10 years ago when this thing came out.
Yeah. Maybe sandboxing, trying to keep processes separate from one another.
So I think though that they rebuilt the engine from scratch, and I think that it's faster. So the people who have been bitching and moaning about they want it faster, this is the fact. It may be that they had limitations of the way they built it from the beginning that couldn't make it that much faster. And now starting from scratch, they could. Mm-hmm. And while we're starting from scratch, do people really want to work with workflows that are on your hard drive and folders anymore? No, people want us to use searches and cloud. And you see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Well, I think how they're thinking about it.
The beauty of all of this, for me anyway, the way I'm trying to look at it is, you know, much like cameras themselves, it is a great time for photographic software.
Yep.
You've got MacFun coming out with tools like Luminar or Neptune. I'm sorry. You've got Capture One. You've got On One with their RAW converter. You've got Affinity Photo and Designer, and they're working on a cataloging and workflow engine. You've still got Photo Mechanic. You've still got, you know, so
we have options. You don't have to use the Adobe one.
Where there used to be really very limited options, now there are all sorts of choices, and each of these platforms or applications rather feel like they've got their own workflow that you can approach in the way that you want to, rather than having to kind of learn one company's workflow because that's the only game in town.
Right.
Now you can approach your post-production kind of the way you want to, because there's so much flexibility in how you get these results anymore.
Right. Right. And I will tell you, like, I've had not issues, but one of the reasons why I'm using Capture One is that I found the color rendering on the Sony sensor in my Pentax to be much better in Capture One than in Lightroom. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for the tools in Capture One or whatever it is. It's just the color rendering was a lot better. I did not find that with my old Canon files, but I did with the Pentax. So that's why I'm using Capture One and have to go through this whole kludge of running EXIF changes on the files, you know.
Now, what have you done any testing? Well,
that's the thing I was going to say, is that I brought these in yesterday, and you know what? I haven't opened them both up in both and haven't side by side to see if I'm crazy or not. But like initially I open them up and I go, hey, it looks pretty good in the new version of Lightroom. Mm-hmm. So maybe they updated the engine in a way with better profiles and whatever it is. I'm going to do some more of that as I sort of get my backlog cleared out in the next couple of days. But you know what? Like it's really tough because if the engine is good and this is a 1.0 version and they've said, we're going to make this better over time. There's some things that aren't in here. As far as I know, they've gotten rid of curves temporarily.
Yeah, because nobody uses curves. Export is coming soon. For now, please to enjoy these on your monitor.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you, man, flipping around the images and stuff is really fast. Like, you know, like really fast, like bridge fast. So if you, you know, way faster than Capture One or Lightroom has been lately. So I don't know if they get the tools up there and I find some way. The problem is you, as far as I know, you can't turn off the cloud end of it. It just is constantly uploading the last 20 gigabytes of your stuff. The part I don't like about that is that what if I'm on a data connection that costs me money, or I'm in a country that I have, or a cable modem that has bandwidth caps, you know?
Right. Is it a sitch where you can tell, like Windows 10 does that. Windows 10, you can say, I'm on a metered connection, you know, don't do automatic updates in the background.
Right,
let me decide. I wonder if they'll do something like that.
They very well may, or you know what? They should just have a checkbox in the settings. I just want to use this locally. I don't need this crap on my phone. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a 64 gigabyte phone. There's no situation that my workflows are worked out. I use my phone when I'm on vacation and I didn't want to bring a laptop. I'm not using my phone to work on normally, you know. I don't own an iPad, so I don't need these features of the cloud. Can I just or have it sync locally on a network? Oh, there's a laptop and a desktop and you have Lightroom on both of them. All right, how much of the last shoots? Do you want a month of your shoots on both all the time? That would be handy.
Right.
You know, so you can walk out the door with your laptop and now you have the last month of stuff. So the last few things you shot for clients plus, you know, that would be nice. So they should give a lot more features. And they said they're going to do that as time goes on. It's interesting.
Didn't they use that a similar language when CC first came out?
That they're going to keep adding features?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it was going to be more robust and more stable and faster. And
yeah, but maybe what they meant is this, you know what I mean? Like maybe they've been working on this for years. They, you know, I don't know.
Right.
But I will tell you that it is apparently a lot of photographers are very not upset. I'm sure there are, well, you know what? It's Twitter. Somebody's upset about everything.
Right. Right.
But there are people out there.
Writing a Medium post about it right now.
Right. There's already 27 up there. Save your voice. Looking at this, playing with this, this is not necessarily the tool that I would design for me and my workflow.
Right.
But it may very well be exactly the tool that somebody else is looking for.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know what? Apple Photos thing that came out, what, three versions ago? It was Mavericks or whatever the
was
one
it,
before
was it
Sierra
Mavericks
came. Or El Cap? El Cap.
Yeah, well, I think it was El Cap.
Okay. So, right. 3 ago. Sorry. So many years go by. in El Cap. So now the Photos is three versions.
We mark
old.
Our lives by the revisions of exactly. Mac OS.
Don't we all? when Photos came out, they said, oh, it's going to be so much better and we're going to have third party tools and all this kind of stuff.
They're still,
and none of that stuff has really happened. Right. I mean, I haven't tried the new latest version. I put it on my laptop, High Sierra, but I haven't played with Photos, but it's certainly not suddenly this amazing tool. So if photographers, if they were worried about people saying, well, all I really need is this Apple Photos thing, you know, Adobe now has that tool.
So is this, it kind of begs the comparison, right? Apple, to many people, Apple kind of, not abandoned, but certainly watered down their support for the pro marketplace.
Yeah, and they got rid of Aperture. Is this
Adobe doing something similar, getting or softening their support for the pro image editing market and catering more to the enthusiast or the amateur? And again, no disrespect, just like you said, no disrespect. Is this Adobe catering to the masses rather than the professionals?
Based upon 1.0, yes. Whether they add all the other tools that the older, you know, there aren't that many tools that are missing. It's more like the way you think about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Here's, and this is my question for Final Cut 10 as well, which I have used before. And actually I personally like quite a bit. I don't use it now because I don't want to pay for it, but I have used it in the past. By the way, I'm using DaVinci 14 for some editing recently, and it's pretty good, even for editing. It's like good, and it's free.
photo editing.
No, for video editing.
Okay, okay. Because there are folks that are using
Resolve
video editing LUTs still photographs.
Yeah. And you can do that in Lightroom or Photoshop, right? You can bring in LUTs. Although, you know, all a LUT is a bunch of curves adjustments, essentially. So
yeah,
all these things are just different ways of saying the same thing. Anyway, I didn't mind the changes they made in Final Cut 10 once they added a bunch of features like multicam and all these things that people were bitching about when the first version came out. There is a feature sort of parody across the old to the new. In fact, the new probably has a bunch of features the old one didn't have. It's just that the features are called different things, work in different ways, and are in different places. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think in some ways, is it that these tools aren't good enough for pros, or is it that the old pros have a certain way of working and they don't want to change? And
I don't know. I mean, using your example, I think a curve adjustment is pretty
basic. Well, yeah, they said they were going to bring it back. There. I think what it is right now is that they're trying to keep absolute parity between Lightroom on the phone or on mobile and Lightroom on desktop. So if you bring a thing over, you can make the same changes on the.
And mobile never had curves?
Mobile had like this, it had the. What is it called? Like sort of guided curves where you could slide the things along the bottom to show where the pivot points were, you know, and you can like move, you know what I'm talking about?
Like the tone panel in Lightroom.
Yes, exactly. It had that kind of thing, but apparently in the new version, I don't know, for whatever reason, unless I haven't found it yet. So I wonder sometimes whether it's me just being grumpy about, I want to do it the hard old way and stop doing things automatically, you stupid machine. And then, you know, somebody goes, sir, it's a drill press. It's okay. You know? So I don't know.
I don't want to take the, you know, like get off my lawn position, but
you could take that.
I mean, I could, but I don't know. I mean, I'll go back to my previous statement that it's a terrific time for choice as a photographer. If you're looking for a different type of workflow or post-production experience.
Affinity is out there. I didn't particularly like the raw editing stuff in there, but that's an option. C1 is an option. Capture One. One you just said. The other one, what's the Luminar one?
MacFun, yeah. Yeah,
the MacFun stuff. There's a DxO raw conversion software, right?
Right. What's the other one that people really like?
There's an open source Lightroom thing. Remember that weird... source Lightroom alternative.
What's it called? Iridient. Iridient developer. Yeah, they gush over that. I've never used it, but a lot of people really love it.
Right. So you get, obviously there are options, right? You're not stuck with anything. Although, man, I don't know. I will be interested to see where this goes. Part of the problem when you're actually, it's one thing if you're just sort of, you know, messing around with your pictures and dicking around or whatever. But if you got to get work done, you have to kind of like settle on a single workflow because you got to get work done. You can't keep changing it. And then you're looking for your folder. Oh, did I edit those in this program or that program? You know what I mean?
Right.
You end up having to settle on something. So part of the problem is that unless you sort of jump in with both feet and suddenly the old one's not available and I have to use the new one. All right, I'll figure out a way to use the new one the way I want to use it. But as of right now, I'll just stick with Capture One until something changes or this improves over the next 6 months to have the features I need.
Well, yeah. And I think we saw that early on with apps in the iPhone ecosystem.
Yep. Yep.
You know, for a while it was Camera Plus. That was the big app. Then it went to Visco. That was the big app. Then it went to Nlight. That was the big app. And then it went, you know, there are all sorts of these apps, Snapseed and I use a couple. I use Photograph and I use another one recommended by Sean Tucker called Darkroom.
Yep.
Which is terrific.
You know, I got to say, because I played with a few of them in the past week, just kind of messing around with these files.
Yeah.
The tools inside of Instagram are pretty good.
Yeah, they're not bad.
They're actually for the fact that they're already in there. They're pretty damn good.
And you know, many people I've talked to a couple people who had no idea that there were further editing tools. They thought they were just presets.
Yeah.
So if you're using Instagram and you think that there are only presets, number one, you can double tap on a preset to control its strength.
Yep.
But then if you go into edit, then you're presented with, brightness, contrast, shadow, yep. highlight recovery, contrast.
Vignetting,
tilt shift. Yeah. Lots of different choices and you can kind of dial things in.
The quality of them is pretty good. I
wish you could do is save that as a preset.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. In fact, there was one of the times when I kind of made one out that like worked really well. And I was like, oh, I'll just save that draft. And I was like, oh shoot, I decided to use a different picture, but I want to put this one up on my main Instagram feed as an outtake.
Right.
I'm like, there's no way for me to save this out without posting it.
Yeah.
You know,
I would love to see them add the ability to save
a preset
edits.
And also just use it for editing and export that image without posting it on Instagram. That would be kind of nice.
Right.
So anyway, to wrap up this Lightroom thing. Yeah. There's no more perpetual license, which is, I imagine that was the plan all along, as everyone does.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, look, like I said, they have made an exorbitant amount of money by transitioning to Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
So there is no reason as a business why they wouldn't transition.
Are their profits
everything.
Way up because of that?
I don't know if stock prices are up, but I've been reading that they have made.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, when I was at the Eddie Adams thing a couple weeks ago, there was Adobe people there and I kept meaning to go down and say, hey guys, I shoot with this camera that's a little weird and the color reproduction isn't great in Lightroom. Can you guys get me in touch with the engineers? And I'll, like if they want to test things out, I'll be a test guinea pig.
Over 5 years, looks like 5 years ago, Adobe stock was at $34.01.
Okay.
And today is at $173.85.
So they're doing all right in the last 5 years. Considering people like Avid and, DigiDesign or whatever it is, Avid bought them. But all those companies are kind of sucking wind, right? I think kind of famously.
They don't seem to be doing as well. And the market, at least in the last couple of days, seems to really dig what Adobe has announced.
Yeah.
It went up $2 since yesterday.
Here's the thing, Jeffrey. I think that there's a business argument to be made that we'd rather have more users than less, more users that engulf more of the user space than a smaller amount of users that are more highly, tuned, right? Mm-hmm, we'd rather have more photographers than less pros.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and look, there is something to be said about this move in a positive way, that if they get to retailer the tool set of Lightroom, maybe, just maybe, that means that a ground floor rewrite of Photoshop is coming,
right?
And they can drop some of the stuff that's been in there since versions 1, 2, or 3, or 4, and lose some of the bloat that has sort of accumulated over the past 30 years.
I'll go even further. What if what if you can make light? I always felt like I was a Lightroom user for many years. I still like Lightroom, but it always felt like a slightly behind the curve technological thing. It felt like
compared to Photoshop, you mean?
Yeah. Like it always felt like Camera Raw in a wrapper that they kind of hastily put together with some organization tools. And they just kept adding features on like a kludgy thing. It felt like, oh, this is what we need to do. All right, we got this code base. Let's kind of put this all together. And I don't know if they've rewritten this whole thing, but it feels like they've rewritten the whole thing because it feels a lot faster.
Does it feel like a more complete app based on what you've seen?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So the question becomes, maybe what they can do is add enough tools to this. And that was sort of the idea of Lightroom in the first place. The fact, Jeffrey, that they're selling the subscription for just the new version of Lightroom without Photoshop involved at all shows that they imagine a huge group of people who don't need Photoshop, who just need Lightroom.
Right.
Right. Cause that like this would go to them. And there are plenty of people like that out there. A lot of people don't need to get down to the pixel level to fix.
Sure. They can do global adjustments or
get in there enough. Cause the
local
masking
adjustments
tools,
that are not, as you said, at the pixel level.
And you could do healing and cloning and the rest of it. Like if you want to get rid of a couple zits, you can do that in Lightroom, So there's a lot of people for whom opening up an image in Photoshop and actually understanding those tools and understanding the power and harnessing the power without screwing things up, you know, for people for whom that's terrifying. And mm-hmm. I understand that because it, you know, with power comes great responsibility, right?
Yeah, sure.
So if you could do all that inside of something like this, well then of course, yeah, let's make a tool for those people. And I think that's what they're doing. It's not necessarily a tool for the pro right now, but it is certainly a very interesting thing. And if they make it a lot better, like Apple's made Final Cut 10, but then again, you know what? Apple got rid of Aperture, you know, they're not too, they haven't updated Logic in 5 years, really, you know? So yeah,
a couple dot releases that I've seen, I haven't even looked anymore.
You know, so I don't know. Anyway, that's all I want to say. All I want to say as we talk for 47 minutes.
Right. So choose your workflow and go with it.
But I don't know if there a version that you can you just go download it to try for 30 days or something like that?
I have no idea.
Because I mean, if you do have a license of any kind, you should go download it and play with it because it's kind of interesting.
I mean, I like the idea of getting things over to the phone or to an iPad. I actually like that idea.
There are iPad Pros with, I think, a terabyte of space on them.
Yeah.
So in a year or two, that's not outrageous.
What's it called? The new Microsoft Surface 2?
Sure. Yeah.
Look, that's
512 is the biggest one. But, you know, my laptop only has 256. So, you know, it's not completely outrageous. And these new iPad, mine's an iPhone 6S, is fine with doing this stuff. I've even edited raw files from my big camera on there. It takes forever. Mm-hmm. But it can be done in a pinch. So, and that's a 3-year-old phone and not the iPad. So those have even bigger processors, and they say these new processors and the new ones are really quick. So it's not outrageous to think that a year or two from now, you know, like my computer and your computer are famously like old, right? We built them before we even started the show, I think.
Yeah. If not before, right when we started.
Right. And I, you know, I've been thinking lately about, you know, it's coming to the end of the year and do I need to spend money for tax reasons? Cause I haven't really bought much this year, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, maybe I should, you know, now that they've got the new 5K iMac with the USB 3 or USB-C Thunderbolt 3 ports on it, which is kind of what I was waiting for. Cause I don't want to get the ones with the old ports and, you know, and then the new ones come out. Maybe I should spend $3,000 and get a new computer, you know, and like do that. Cause that'd be a nice thing. And then I keep thinking, man, if I had that for 5-6 years, like I've had this one, would that be my last desktop computer of the old school style that I've been using and building for the last 20 years? That would be weird, right? Like, is the whole world moving into this weird mobile cloud space? And whether I like it or not, I'm going along with them.
Right.
Who's the guy I shot who worked on Helvetica, did Verdana, and you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Verdana, the font, but Matthew Carter.
Oh, okay. Type designer. Okay.
I remember going to his house up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he had, this was, God, I don't know, 2008 or 9, because Conrad was still up in Boston. And I went into his house and in 2008 or 9, he still had an OS 9 box sitting there with a CRT monitor.
Wow.
Because at the time, typographer or whatever the hell people use to do this stuff.
Yeah. Or fontographer.
Fontographer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Only existed with the certain tools that it had, right? That when they made the OS 10 version, they removed XYZ that he needed or wanted or
used.
And so he had an OS 10 machine and then he had an OS 9 machine. And when he was working, he used the OS 9 machine.
Well, so look, I
don't
want to
be that guy, right?
There's somebody out there still using, you know, still rocking freehand on an old Mac box.
Exactly.
There's gotta be.
Right. Right. Of course. So, you know, the question is, I don't know that I want to be that guy. Although what's wrong with being that guy? I don't know. I think about this a lot. I mean, this is sort of goes back to that, you know, the EVF discussion we've had a number of times. It's like, if that's where the world's going, why fight so hard to fight where the industry is going? But then at the same time, you know, the TV industry was going to 3D and like that ended up being nothing. So you don't want to follow like a lemming. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
so what? Yeah, what do you do?
I don't know. I think you use what works for you today, and then, you know, I used to see the people when people I used to buy new computers all the time, right? I think you and I both did, right?
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know? Hey, new CPU came out and it's twice as fast, because that's what used to happen 10, 15 years ago. All right, every 18 months I'll build a new machine for myself or whatever. And I used to see the people who waited 4 years to build a new computer or buy a new computer, and I'd be like, what are you doing, man? Just buy the new one all the time. Like, you know, this is like, be up to date, whatever, you know? And of course there's less more incremental upgrades nowadays, and it's less of a problem. But now I'm the old guy who's just like, oh, I'm going to work with what I have until it breaks. Right. And then I'll dump a bunch of money into whatever the new latest greatest is, and I'll use that for years until it breaks. I'm suddenly that guy, right? Like, don't even look at the new cameras until you decide you need a new camera for some reason, and then go look at what the latest is out. If you're constantly looking at press releases and trying to decide, oh, should I buy a new camera? Because Fuji just put out, it's like, no, your current camera is fine until you say, you know what? This isn't doing what I need it to do. I think there's new stuff out there. Let me go look and see what's out there to see what I should buy. You know,
right.
It's a very different way of consumerism.
Well, and according to Tim Cook, even yesterday, don't give up on the Mac Mini.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know? And then the iMac Pro, right, is coming out in a few months. That's going to start at $5,000.
Something like that.
I don't need a Xeon and whatever it is to like edit photos. Like, you don't need that to edit video. So who's that for?
Right.
You know, I don't want that. If you're going to give me a Pro, just give me a Mac Pro. Give me a thing the size of a, you know, 6x12x15 box that I can put a GPU in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And a couple drives in. That's what people want. That looks really amazing. That puts together, like, you know, fits together like a jigsaw puzzle, like their old stuff did. That's what all the pros want. They want that little box with like 15 USB Thunderbolt 3 ports on the back.
Yeah. Look at any number of current, you know, PCs.
Right.
And give them that.
Right. Yeah.
Let me swap out power supply. Let me swap out RAM. Let me swap out drives. Let me swap out, you know, GPU.
I mean, you can make certain things proprietary, but just make it badass and upgradable. That's what people want. That's what people who were going to spend $5,000 on a computer want.
Right.
You know. Well, we just spent an hour on that. So,
thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. where do you want to go?
Well, in other photography news, the MacArthur Grant, which we've talked about a couple times, a photographer, Daywood Bay, has won the 2017 MacArthur Genius Grant.
Explain something to me about the MacArthur Fellowship. From what I understand, you get a bunch of money, or you get like $250,000.
I think
right?
It's $250,000, and you get there's no it's strings no strings attached to it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do something cool with it.
Do something cool, or don't. But I guess there are a couple ways to look at it. You look at it as,
or buy a house.
Go finance something new and do something cool, or here's us, you know, paying for what you've done thus far.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe. You know, I don't. The way I understand it, it's really to do with as you will.
Okay. Sure. The interesting thing about it is that a lot of these other things, like our photographer of the week today has a Guggenheim fellowship from the early 80s. A lot of awards like this, even the Jad Abumrad one from a couple of years ago, it's like, okay, here's a guy who's been doing stuff for years, but certainly is still at the beginning or middle beginning of his career of what he could theoretically do over the course of, you know, 40 years of work.
Sure.
This guy began his career 40 years ago. He's like later in his life. It's interesting that they gave it to somebody who's had it for, you know, a lot of awards like this are to get you started and give you a claim in the beginning versus
correct.
You know, and this one, they give it to people all over their spectrum of their work, which I kind of think is interesting. That's all I wanted to say.
Well,
but you disagree or are you just saying that?
No, I think it's interesting too. I think what I am taking away from it, a couple things. Number one, that there's value in photography as an art form, as a creative pursuit, yeah. as you know, all these things. And number two, that there's value in this case, Mr. Bay's vision, his filter, his eye, his body of work, that there's value in what he chooses to photograph.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Or certainly value within what he did choose to photograph over the last 40 years, especially, you know?
Yeah.
They're looking at this as, you know, he shot basically African-American portraiture for the last X years, you know, 40 years. And they're saying, oh, his view of all of this stuff over the last 40 years has value. And let's see what he can do that going forward. It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
As all this stuff kind of, I don't know, just interesting. Yeah. Lovely work. We should use him as a photographer of the week one day.
Yeah. Beautiful work.
I have a bunch of people on the list.
Chicago Tribune article. It's in the show notes. Some beautiful work.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. What was the other thing? The website discussion. This week's sponsor notwithstanding. Do you need a website?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Do you need? Okay. Here, let's back up. Do you need a website as a photographer? Well, you don't. First of all, you don't need anything.
Right.
And it depends on the kind of work you do. We went to the Contemporary Art Museum in Montreal 2 days ago.
Is it nice?
It was okay. So there's two art museums in Montreal that we went to. One is sort of like the main sort of art museum, which was excellent and big, you know, sort of like one of those, you know, it's not the Louvre or the Met, but it's good art museum kind of thing.
Okay.
Which was excellent. And then there's a Contemporary Art Museum, which we hear is excellent, but they were between exhibits. So instead of spending $30 to get in or whatever, you spend $5 to get in, but you only got to see 20 pieces of art in sort of like a single gallery. Sort of they had like a slimmed down thing of their permanent collection or selections from
their collection to show. Okay.
Including some work by a woman who I think we should use for our Photographer of the Week at some point, maybe next week, which I want to have a long, lengthy discussion with you about. So we'll table that for a second, but, it was excellent. What was the point of bringing this up? Oh, so one of the other artists in there, when there's artists I haven't seen before and I see their work on the wall or whatever, I'll sometimes take pictures of the labels or open up a browser window and do a search for them and pull up their website and just have it on my phone. I got to look at that later, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I looked up one of these guys and he has no website and no social media. The only articles about the only things that link to him are his gallery representation page at his gallery.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Like very minimal.
There are a number of photographers, current, contemporary, that I, Gregory Crutzen doesn't have a site.
Right. Good example. Yeah. Somebody like
Instagram.
Him. Right.
Fred Herzog doesn't have a website. He's represented by Equinox in Canada.
Right.
And if you go to fredherzog.com, it redirects you to the gallery.
Right. I think that there's, you know, your two examples and my example of this other guy are people who are relics of the old way of art. Does that make sense? And I don't mean relic in a bad way. I just mean that they are people who got in before the whole world changed. You know, they're in that high art world where gallery representation is what it's about. And rich people are paying you to make art. And in that case, who cares if they can find you on a website? Cause you're in, you know, the Contemporary Art Museum of Montreal, right?
Yeah.
Or you're at the, you know, Gagosian Gallery or whatever it is every 3 years when you come out with your set of stuff and people know you and they want you, you don't need to make new friends, you know?
as much as we want to, you don't need to.
Title.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are those people, and including this guy who I think is my age, I figured out. So he's like, you know, not too old. He's like middle-aged person. And yeah, zero anything online. Cause it said he lived in New York. He's from Canada, but he lives in New York. So I was like, oh, I should look him up and see if I can go take his picture or say hi or whatever. Mm-hmm. No contact information, no nothing, just his gallery. Right. And well,
and there are other people though, Bill, that use social media exclusively. They use Instagram, They use Facebook. They've got a Facebook page.
Right.
Yeah. Or a Facebook presence.
Yeah.
And then use Twitter and Instagram.
Well, there's also a question in podcasting. Does a podcast need a website? I mean,
that's a great question.
Our show is on top of 5x5, which has its own system. But if I were going to start a show tomorrow and I was going to put it up on SoundCloud or whatever and use their feed, because you can just use their feed.
Sure.
There's nothing that says you can't do that. I think there isn't the Neil deGrasse Tyson one. I don't think has any existence other than the feed from SoundCloud.
I don't think so.
Star Talk or whatever.
Star Talk. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a number of big ones like that.
Yeah. Unless you're putting together a show note heavy site, which look,
the show notes are in the metadata now. Like I never open up an app to see the show notes. I just look at it inside of Overcast.
Yeah.
You know,
does Overcast preserve the links or is it just,
No, it preserves the links. Yeah. It's all just, and then,
I mean, so that's a great question. If the platform, man, that's a great question. A, how many platforms do you need? You know, for a long time, the popular wisdom is you've got to put it everywhere.
Right.
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 You've got to have the blog. You've got to have all of it.
Well, like I said last week, that kid I shot up at the farm, he's 4 million followers on Snapchat.
Right.
You know how many followers he has on Twitter? Like 1,000.
Right.
I don't understand that. That I don't understand at all. You think that somebody who has a huge audience on one of them would almost automatically have at least half that many people on all the other ones. You know what I mean?
But they don't. I mean, look at the Caseys and then the Marquez Brownlees of the world. 5, 6, 7 million people on YouTube. I don't know that I've ever even looked for Casey Neistat's website.
Right. Although, then you go back to the argument of, well, yeah, but what happens when Snapchat goes out of business and all your things are, well, that's a bad example because all your things are gone anyway. What happens
in 24 hours when you want to, yeah.
Yeah, or when Instagram decides that it wants to ban you because for some reason that you can't control, you know what I mean? Like, thought you were somebody else and you put up boobs, so you're banned.
And it is in some cases arbitrary. I know a photographer, hi Gareth, down in Australia, who has regularly had content flagged because God forbid, I mean, he does these beautiful fine art nudes, but God forbid you don't scribble out the nipple. I mean, and if anything, doesn't the scribbling out just call more attention to it?
Yeah. It's really weird when they blur out the nipple, because then it's just like this weird blur.
Yeah. I mean, it just, for me, it's sort of like, you know, that the Louis C.K. routine where he says, you know, when people say the F word,
right,
like they physically, think about it. Just say it.
Right. Right.
Because now I'm thinking about it. Whereas if you just said it, I would move on.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you're drawing attention to the area that's supposed to be off limits, but you're making me look because now it's got white scribbles over it.
Right. I mean, I will tell you, I do not have a big Instagram following. First of all, I got in really late and I don't cultivate it that actively.
Neither one of us do. We're hovering close to the same amounts.
Yeah, like 1,500 or something like that. Something I don't have like that many.
2,000, 1,500? Yeah.
Right. And so there.
But to be fair, Bill, you're not climbing bridges and you know, hanging off of skyscrapers.
Yeah, or taking pictures of women in scantily clad whatever, which is, you know, although I will say.
Covered in cooking oil.
What's really interesting about, you know, everyone says, oh, people want, you know, a thing and just make what you want. You know what gets the most likes and hits and new followers and stuff? When I put up pictures of beautiful women.
Right.
By far. So. Don't tell me that.
And puppies.
And puppies, right.
Puppies. Follow the doggist. Follow Harlow and Sage.
Right. So I don't have 200,000 followers on Instagram. So I can't use that as my calling card. I will tell you, when clients want to come see my work, they go to my website.
Right.
And they still actively do. And people do go to my website and people ask about my website and people comment on my website. So it's not that the website isn't, I may be old school. This may go back to the other conversation about Lightroom. I may be old school, but the way it's been done and having some sort of control and my own way of doing things is not a bad thing in my opinion.
Right. And you do have some of the shooters that have been, I mean, look, Dan Winters has embraced Instagram beautifully,
yep,
and posts incredible work,
yep,
and comments and engages. And, you know, this is a photographer who's been shooting for, right, how long has Dan been shooting? 30 years?
Yeah. Mid 80s, I think. So, and then Jeffrey, you also have the people who built a website 15 years ago and haven't changed it since. I mean, we've been to a lot of our photographers of the week. You and I have both made comments as we open,
yeah,
them up and go,
yeah,
God, why is this? It's a 300 by 200 pixel version of the image.
Right. Right.
Right. You know what I mean? With aerial underneath and you got to click the right arrow and it cycles through and you can't get the thumbnails. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that there's sort of a happy medium. You got to keep up with the website thing. You can't just leave it as a flash thing from 2002 because you're not going to be able to see it very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, do you need a website? No. And it depends what you're trying to do. If you're trying to attract customers, I think your average person who's going to hire you to take pictures of them for their high school graduation or wedding or, you know,
mm-hmm,
that kind of thing, or portrait headshot or whatever it is. Like, yeah, maybe those people are going to go to a website. They're going to want to see a website. But even that,
are you doing the work, or did your child go, this is the hotness, this is the guy or girl that I want to shoot my pictures,
yeah,
because I found them on Snapchat and all my friends are using this person?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Maybe you and I are just old and out of date. Could, mm-hmm, be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need one, but I still have one and I don't imagine ever getting rid of it.
Right.
It's weird. We're going to be to the point where you and I have .coms and it's like, oh my God, they've been around forever. It's like people in New York City with 212 phone numbers, you know. I have a 917 phone number in New York City, which at the time, 20 years ago, was like, oh, you have a 917. And is now like, oh my God, he's been here a long time. He has a 917 phone number.
Right. Right?
Like, I've been here long enough to where that's come around again. The flip side of this, Josh wrote in and said, how do you do social media without doing social media? How do you use social media without getting sucked into social media? And that's a similar, it's like a relevant or related question, but also a good one. You know, I have a hard time with this. It's like, you want to have this stuff up there, but you don't want to spend 3 hours a day looking at crap. You know,
I think you and I are kind of use cases for that. We are using social media, though we're probably at a 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
In terms of the efficiency or effectiveness of how we use social media.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that. That's fair. We're very inefficient. It's like, I've had people who say, oh God, I hate when there's a guy that I know who sends out email. Somehow I got on his email list and he's like a well-known guy with lots and lots of followers and all the different stuff and blah, 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 blah. And I get these emails and it's like, you know, oh my God, it's so great. There's something I want to share with you guys. And you know what I mean? Like that sort of tone, you know. And every time I see it, I go, oh God, I don't want to be that guy. Like it just, right. I'm like, ew. it makes me want to like go take a shower. Right. But there's a lot of people for whom that's the tone, right? That like, that's the way we do things. Why do you have a problem with that? And actively using social media, people who time their posts at certain times of the day. So they come out and it's like, I post my picture of the day when I'm done with my picture of the day. Should I post it at 8 a.m. the next morning? Because that way X people in these time zones will see it at the top of their feed. Maybe.
Right. That's what Buffer says that is the optimal time.
Right. Exactly. But that to me feels so, it's trying so hard, you know, maybe that's why I only have 3,500 Twitter followers or whatever. Right.
Right.
Maybe I don't say interesting stuff. Maybe I don't say enough quirky stuff that gets, you know, I'm going to make some quirky statement that gets retweeted 400 times. It's like, you know, I can poop on the new Sony camera because whatever it is, and photographers will giggle and retweet it because I made some silly joke about whatever it is. It's like, wait, but is that actually adding anything to the world?
Right.
You know, I put out stuff on social media when I finish work and I put it out. I don't really think about it that much. Go ahead. Sorry.
If, well, I was just going to say, if more people, If the bulk of social media users asked that question before posting, social media would crumble. Is this going to make the world better?
Right. Yeah.
That's not the discussion. Right?
Am
that's
I actually not adding to the conversation in a useful way?
That's not the conversation.
No, because social media, I mean, as much as they claim it's about the conversation, as much as some people do use it as a conversation tool, as you've pointed out, a lot of the people who use it as a conversation tool are... It's kind of like when NPR suddenly got into podcasts and now they have the top five most popular podcasts in the world. It's like, of course they do. They're NPR.
Right.
So they have all those people listen to NPR who are all like, you know, rich people in the city who have iPhones or something like, oh, I can get this on my phone. And then they go sign up for podcasts and now suddenly they have 4 million followers. You know what I mean? Right. Or subscribers.
And to be fair, I mean, they are very well, by and large, at least the shows that I've listened to are really well done.
Oh, absolutely. Because they've been basically making these things for 30, 40 years, right?
They've taken what they've done on the radio and went, oh, here's a new delivery platform.
They've just leveraged it to a new platform. Right. Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of the photographers that you're talking about, like Dan and other people who go do that. They're well-known people who have thousands and tens of thousands of fans and photographers who like them. And it's suddenly like, oh, wow, you know, now, you know, so-and-so is on Instagram. That's cool. Let's go follow him because I've been a fan of his for 20 years. It's like, well, sure. You know, that guy is going to have a different view.
One of the draws and one of the things that I have embraced much more and still maybe not to the degree that I could, but is the potential, and I want to highlight that because it's not guaranteed, but the potential for engagement with the person that you're commenting on in a way that's different from a website experience.
Sure. You know, the other day I was in, when I was in Quebec City, we sat down at this place and we got like a burger we split and then some poutine.
Mm-hmm.
You had poutine?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you like poutine?
Not really.
Okay. Yeah. See, I've never been.
It's a little heavy for me.
Yeah, I've never been a gravy or cheese fry kind of guy in like even an American sort of diner situation. But I felt like I should try poutine and this was supposedly good poutine. So we get poutine. I took one bite and I was like, this is not for me. So just as a joke, there's a guy named Rene Ritchie who runs iMore.com, who's on MacBreak Weekly every week. Mm-hmm. And he's from that area. I think he's from Montreal. I should have looked him up while I was up there. Anyway. He always talks about poutine. He wants, you know, Apple to make an emoji with poutine so you can hold down the potato and you get poutine. Haha. You know, like he makes things about that.
Right.
So I tweeted, man, I tried poutine, didn't really like it. You know, sorry, Rene Ritchie, I feel like I'm letting you down. Right. And he wrote me back and said, you know, 5 minutes later, oh, I've never heard that reaction. Blah, 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 blah. Where'd you go? You know, and we went back and forth a little bit. That wouldn't happen in anything other than Twitter, say. Right. Or certainly not like that in sort of an open, it's almost like everyone in the town square talking to each other, just chatting.
Yeah.
And there's something amazing about Twitter, especially for that, where you can just talk to somebody you've never met before and have a conversation based upon stuff you know about each other, or, you know, people write me all the time. Oh, you know, I like that part of it,
right.
But you can easily get sucked into it and you get nothing else done. It's so you know, it ends up becoming a broadcast medium plus an occasional dipping in for me. I certainly don't live in there the way a lot of people do. You know, we went to this fancy restaurant the other night that Trudeau took Obama when he was up there. It was like this, you know, our one fancy meal of the trip.
Right.
And there's, you know, these are like $55 steaks at this place, you know, like super fancy, whatever.
Wow.
And there's like this girl across the way. By the way, not incredibly good, not very good at all. And there's a girl across the way with her camera. It's like, you know, nicely lit restaurant, all whatever it is, taking pictures with her phone of her food. And I was like, this is not the time or place to be taking pictures of your food. Just eat your food. You know what I mean? Like, know when not to take a picture. We were in a church the other day. I put up a video of a pipe organ playing, and I just took this nice little video of the pipe organ. But there was this woman, I think she was a Chinese, there was a group of Chinese tourists who came in and she hadn't turned off the shutter sound on her phone, Jeffrey.
Okay.
She walks to the middle of this church, quiet church, right to the middle of it, and holds up her camera and pans around holding down the shutter button. And and then stops, looks at them.
Cue Bill's transformation from David Banner to... Yeah.
Bill pulls out his case and starts putting together a sniper rifle, right?
Right? Oh, Bill.
Then, no, she looks at the camera. She flips through him a little bit. She holds it up again. I swear to God, she took 400 pictures of panoramas in this dark church with a little tiny, like, you know, RX100 kind of camera.
Wow.
And I was like, what are you doing? Like, there is a... Okay, first of all, turn off the beeping and camera sounds on your phone if you're going to be traveling and going into quiet places like cathedrals.
Right.
Secondly, what are you doing taking 200 pictures inside this place? First, those are not going to stitch together well. You do not have the dynamic range to take those pictures that are going to look good. Like, what are you doing? I wanted to kill her. I was like, Conrad was actually getting even more mad just because it's like, it's know when to not take pictures, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know where that's going. Anyway, I guess. Do you have anything else to say about that?
No, I think you. I think your sniper rifle comment pretty well solved it.
You know, in both of the TV shows that we or three TV shows we watched in the last week, there's the scene, and this is such a trope now. Jeffrey, you and I are driving in a car, having a conversation, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, camera shot over one person's shoulder, T-bone car.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
They use that in everything now. I've seen it three times in the last week.
Yeah. I don't know where... The first place I can remember seeing that in recent films was probably one of the Bourne movies with Matt Damon.
Sure.
Where the car kind of spins all the way around.
Yeah. The third one, by the way, the third Bourne movie, I think is the best. I like the third one. I was like, well, everyone needs to stop using this trope. It's really annoying. Like, oh, we're having this inane conversation about poutine. And then, you know. Yeah, been there, done that. Now I'm expecting it. Now every time anybody's having a conversation in a car in a TV show,
You're looking.
They're going to get hit. They're going to get hit.
Every time you're having a conversation in a car.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, does this happen all the time to everyone? Because it seems to happen all the time to everyone. That's good stuff. Hey, since we're running long as it is, do you want to let's talk about our sponsor for today?
Let's talk about our sponsor.
Yeah. I just have to pull up the read because I didn't have it ready. I'm one of those people.
Damn it, Bill.
I know I'm terrible. Today's sponsor is the wonderful people. I know the wonderful people at Squarespace, where you can build a website when you need one, and they make it really easy to do. You can create a beautiful website to turn your cool idea into money that comes back to you. You know, you could sell your pictures. You sold stuff on a Squarespace site, right?
Yeah.
Did it work well for you?
Oh, Squarespace has a brilliant implementation of commerce.
Okay.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's what I was
They've also
say.
Recently just added gift cards, gift certificates.
Oh, I saw that. Which is kind of cool. And you could do coupon codes and stuff too, can't you?
Yep.
See, it's all very interesting. It's all amazing. You can publish your blog. You could sell products. You could promote your physical or online business. It's really cool for restaurants and stuff where you can just, what's your address? And bloop, it puts in like a little Google Map box in there with your address and with directions to your place. You can announce your upcoming event or special project you're working on. I like the little thing up top too. You can put the, what's it called? The bar up top, the announcement bar.
Yeah, the announcement bar, notification bar type thing.
That's really handy. It's really good. Because Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, like Jeffrey and I said, the ability to customize look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. So, you know, you go to a Squarespace site on an iPad or on a mobile device, or nowadays, a lot of times you can just change your desktop browser to act as a mobile browser and shrink it down a little bit, and you can see exactly how it's going to look on your Squarespace site. Right.
You do it right. There's a tool at the top. You can select desktop, tablet, or mobile device.
Usually it's in a dev tools. No?
No, it's right in the top of the edit window.
In Squarespace. Yeah, Squarespace.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, right. you're talking about
I was talking
the browser
just in the browser in general.
Oh, yeah. Sure. My mistake.
Yeah. Of course, they also have a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, domain extensions. So, you know, if you're sick and tired of the old .com thing that Jeffrey and I use, you could use, you know, .us or .photography or .pp or whatever people use. What is the cool one now?
Or if you're Freddie, you can use .beers.
Does he have .beers?
Yeah. Overbeers.beers is his.
There you go. He should have just gotten over.beers. Maybe wasn't available.
Don't tell him that.
Okay. Analytics.
Freddie, disregard that. You didn't hear it.
They've got analytics that help you grow in real time. You got built-in search engine optimization, so people will always know where to find you. Free secure hosting and nothing to patch or upgrade ever. It's always up to date. They're dealing with any sort of zero-day attacks to, you know, whatever they use in the back end to make this thing happen, which is amazing. I don't know how the hell they actually make this software work as well as they do. And they have 24/7 award-winning customer support. I remember when they were talking about, they had some of their servers in New York, and during Sandy, the power went out and they were basically bucket brigading diesel down to the generators to keep the servers going, which is, you know, that's how dedicated they are. These people are hardcore. 24/7 award-winning customer support by email and chat. And, you know, you got to go make your website at Squarespace. Make it yourself. Easily create your website all by yourself. It'll be beautiful. It'll be secure. It'll be fast. It'll be easy. Do it with Squarespace. They're great. Thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and not taking pictures. You can go check out squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code OTP to save 10% on your first purchase of a website or domain. Thank you, Squarespace. Yeah, they're good. I got to go update my Squarespace site. Actually, I've been remiss for the past couple weeks. Wow. We have lots of stuff. We still have the photo book. We still have Q&A feedback. We're kind of running long, aren't we?
Well, let's do it next time then.
Yeah. Cause we only have a few days till the next show.
Right.
Okay. So, okay. Here's one thing that I want to do before we get to, the little miscellany. I was, Conrad was reading an article about a rock climber who was killed, by an avalanche, the other day on adventurejournal.com. I don't know how she got to it through some, you know, and at the bottom of it was a little thing, that one of his friends wrote, which I wanted to read and see what you thought about it.
Okay.
Over the last few years, Kennedy wrote, as I've watched too many friends go to the mountains only to never return, I've realized something painful. It's not just the memorable summits and crux moves that are fleeting. Friends and climbing partners are fleeting too. This is the painful reality of our sport, and I'm unsure what to make of it. Climbing is either a beautiful gift or a curse. Clichés like they were just following their passion, or what we all say in moments of loss and tragedy, of course, this is just bullshit. There is this dual nature of sublime meaning and utter absurdity in climbing mountains. Sending harder, bigger, more badass routes won't make you better, more humble, more gracious, or a happier human. Yet we often approach these mountains like they can. There's no glory, no real answers in sending in summits, yet we organize our entire lives around the myth that there are. Now, certainly photography does not have the same level of life or death as rock climbing. But I think that saying still resonated with me about any pursuit that you hold that dear. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not a discussion for this time. Maybe it's let's think about it and we can discuss it next time. But I read this and said, you know, I want to bring this up on the show and see what Jeffrey has to think about it.
Well, I mean, look, in the short version, and I'd love to dive into this more deeply when I've had a little more time to look at it, because it's kind of a late addition.
Right. It's interesting, though, right?
Yeah. The short version is we are all where we are.
Yep.
And there are those of us, and I put myself very firmly in that camp, who, when we are in the thick of trying to birth something, when we are in the thick of trying to put something out in the world, it can seem like life or death. It can seem like the most important thing in the world. It can seem like getting it right is the only thing that is driving you forward.
Right.
Certainly no physical harm in the same way as mountain climbing. And I'm not making that comparison at all.
Neither am I. I just thought that the wording was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is an existential toll that making takes. There is a cost to an emotional cost to making, maybe not an individual picture, maybe not an individual painting, maybe not an individual film, but a body of work over time can take its toll. And there could be that one straw that broke the camel's back. There could be that one project that you thought was going to be your, you know, godfather, your, you know, I don't know, pick amazing project name here, and it doesn't, and you're crushed. You're left empty in your own mind. So, I mean, I think it is important to remember that we are all where we are, and it is important to take what we do both seriously and with a grain of salt, because yes, in the end,
we need to take everything more seriously and also less seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hard to find that line.
Yes.
Because the only way you ever get really good at something is by taking it that seriously. But by taking it that seriously, you become myopic about the rest of the world a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to talk about the book again, but there is an interesting byproduct of now being done with the book. I delivered the final files to the publisher. And in fact, I just this morning got confirmation from the Library of Congress that it's been accepted, and they sent me back the number. And so that's really exciting to me. There is something, and maybe this is something for next week, but I just got like really kind of hit by this. There will be a record that I was here.
Yeah.
If I never do anything else,
your name will at least show up in a search at the Library of Congress.
There is something that says, at least he did this. This is something,
right?
You know, but now that it's kind of done, there's this vacuum of, I've been thinking about this for so long. And you've done this with projects where you finish them and you go, holy shit, I didn't put any time into thinking about what comes next. I was so consumed with this thing that I didn't give any thought to what I was going to do once this thing inevitably came to an end.
Yeah, but you could argue that the projects where that's true are the best projects.
Yeah.
Where you're so deep in it that you don't even realize, and then you come out and you go, oh man, I gotta go back and yeah.
Yeah. I read something the other day that said if you don't hate the project you're working on by the end,
right,
you didn't put enough into it.
Yeah, no, that's entirely true.
You know? I mean, I'd like to chew on this for a little bit.
Okay, I thought I'd put it in there because I think it's you know, your whole thing about evidence that you're here. That could also is probably why a lot of these guys and gals climb. You know, I did this thing. I wasn't just here. I lived, I ate, I died. Mm-hmm. I did all that stuff, but I actually did something. You know, it's a little bit of the, yes, ships are safe in the harbor. That's not why we build ships. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. Life is meant to be lived. And sometimes that living is dangerous. And you know, what are you going to say? I cut you off.
No, go ahead.
In the case of rock climbing, it's can get a little obtuse and insane. In our case, it's like, okay, if you obsess about something, well, maybe that's why we're here, to obsess about things.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. What I do know is that the times that I have been to Yosemite or Zion, and it was
see like, those people on the wall. You're like, what is Zion wrong with you?
That's probably the better the better comparison for me, because if you've ever been to Zion, there's a spot called Angel's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, for a rock climber, they could probably sprint to the top and not hold on to anything. But for me, it was
most terrifying thing of your life.
It was absolutely the most terrifying, most precarious.
Yeah.
Hike, walk, journey, whatever it is.
Yeah, I didn't
I've ever made.
I won't.
It was terrifying.
I went to a higher point. I went up to observation. We went up to observation point and walked another 2 miles instead of doing that, because I don't like heights that much.
It was terrifying. And then you get to the top, Bill, and there's just this little plateau, and there are people sitting there. They've got feet off dangling the edge. Over the edge. Yeah. And I am like, people are nuts. I'm thinking to myself, a breeze could come up and zip you, you know, and then you look across the valley, Bill, and there are those people, you know, pinned into the side with their hammock type things. They're sleeping there for the afternoon, and then they're going to continue. You couldn't get me up there for love or money.
Yep. No. Uh-uh. Even thinking about it, I'm just like, no.
My palms are getting all.
Oh yeah. There were times even going to observation point where it's not even, I mean, yeah, there were steep off to one side, but there was a good 5 feet of path. You know what I mean? That you have between the wall and the other thing. And I'm still like, that still goes down 2,300 feet. Like
not so on Angel's Landing. There are parts where it's, you know, a foot wide. And, exactly. And I'm thinking to myself,
hold on to the chain, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, that, yeah. Hold on to the, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you and there was a video somebody put up of going to Angel's Landing, and it was in the snow. So there was ice on parts of that section.
Oh, I get the hives just thinking about it.
No. Yeah, it was I'll find it and put it in, because
please don't. don't tell me where the link is, because then I'll be tempted to watch the damn thing.
GoPro hiking. Yeah, I think this one of these is one of the things. Ugh. Yeah, and he goes all the way to. Oh, this one is way too clean. Yeah, there's one where he's like walking and it's ice. I'll find one. Anyway, Fun.
I would like to put something in for us to think about. Jesus. No, you know what? I'll bring it up next time, because the book is out in the living room. But it is a book called Once by Wim Wenders.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful little book. It was sent to me by a listener. And there's an essay at the beginning about photography and about what photography means to both the subject and I'm not going to give it away, but it's very profound, and it's gotten me thinking quite a bit about how he presented his argument. And I think he's right.
All right, add it to
anyway,
the thing.
But we'll, by and we'll large, and it's a terrific book. It's a series of photographs with little anecdotes next to them. And each one of them begins once. You know, once I was in Monument Valley and happened upon, you know, Martin Scorsese, who was underneath his broken down car trying to fix it. So we gave him a ride, blah, blah, you know, just these really interesting observations. And I love the format of the book so much that I could see doing something like it.
Oh, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But remember, the writing was the part you didn't like.
Yeah. That kind of the technical writing.
Oh, okay. Oof. Yeah. Oof. All right, let's go to the group. We'll get to one last thing. Just as a quick little aside, William Eggleston, who is all, you know, famous photographer, is also kind of famously doodles on piano a lot. And somebody decided to put out an album of his music that he recorded on. He has like a little Korg synth that has a built-in sequencer. And over the years, he's recorded these things to, not that bad.
Like a cruise ship?
No, it's not like a, not like that. a company called Secretly Canadian, released by Secretly Canadian, called Music with a K. Is a bunch of instrumentals performed by Eggleston on his Korg synth over the course of several years in the 90s, recorded with the machine's internal memory. And then some guy culled through hours and hours and hours of this stuff that he made. Wow. And they made an album. I haven't listened to it yet. I didn't get around to it. But it's just funny when you have, you know, these people who go and end up doing this kind of stuff too. So I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's called Music with a K, M-U-S-I-K. And it's apparently Eggleston improvising.
Could have been Music in the Key of E.
All right, let's go.
I love this picture in the Times article, by the way. The one of the oscilloscopes on the table with the little picture taped to the wall or whatever. Yeah. Hey, this reminds me, if you have
very
not
modest,
seen,
like boring apartment, either.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A little power strip in the background. If you have not seen the current issue of Wired Magazine, which is a big feature on Blade Runner 2049. Go check it out. There are some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful portraits.
Yeah, Dan showed a bunch of those
by Dan Winters.
Yeah, Dan showed a bunch of those during his talk a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
did he talk at all about making the props? He made that little sort of Esper-esque machine, and he made.
In fact, I think he built the entire thing that they were in. I think.
Man, I would love to see his shop.
I think he said something along the lines of. He told them that they were in an abandoned mental institution. Like that's how they should react.
That's how they framed the shoot. That's
yeah, okay. Something like that.
Wow.
But yeah, I'll find that.
Do they roll tape on that thing at all?
You know what? I don't know. I've been thinking about that myself. I'll see if I can find it. I'll make a note of that and see if I can find it for next week.
All right, what are we doing? We're going to the group.
We're going to go to the group. I was just trying to find the Wired article that I could put in for this thing.
Okay. Yep, yeah. Beautiful pictures.
Yep.
Beautiful pictures.
They always are.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Assignments. All right. High noon.
Yeah.
There's a picture. In fact, speaking of high noon, although I don't know why, other than it's a Western. There's a picture in this Once book where he's describing this meeting with Martin Scorsese, and the next frame he talks about an overturned airplane where John Ford used to make movies, and it's this wide panoramic shot of Monument Valley with a crashed Cessna on its back.
Oh, that's cool.
You know.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a neat photograph, but anyway. High noon.
Mario Mirabile with the yellow with the woman. That's kind of cool down there. Mike Waller, beautiful. Vicky Brown, beautiful. Although she got some clouds, so she's kind of, you know.
Yeah, I like that. Mike Waller, what's going on there? What's that guy doing? Oh, he's parkour. So he's like.
I don't understand those parkour people.
Is he going up or is he coming down?
It doesn't matter.
He's coming down eventually.
Hey, Chris Worth's picture looks like Death Valley, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Mario, I love that shot.
It's nice with the woman.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty cool.
Martin Rotz. Martin's been doing some great stuff. He sent me the latest issue of his magazine, March and Rock. He does a quarterly zine, and he did it on matte paper this time. And man, is it beautiful. I think it's his best one yet.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Really, really good.
That's really nice. Wow. Look at Barry's picture of the sundial. That's kind of neat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. Neat.
Old school. Dave, wow. Lots of good ones.
Jen LaChapelle.
Yep.
High noon in Havana, Cuba. Look at that great little car. Wow. That's how
they roll down there.
Man.
Oh, Dennis Skyam's the old harbor. Looks like a drone shot.
Yep.
It's beautiful. Wow, that's nice.
David Young.
I do get sucked into the aerial shape kind of thing, the sort of geometry aerial stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus, remember when you know, Steinmetz had to go out in his little paraglider, and now you've got all these people running around with Mavic Pros.
Couple grand, you get a a thing, and you put my camera on it with a stabilized whatever, and you go shoot whatever you want.
Yeah, amazing,
really amazing.
Yeah, that's a neat shot, Dennis. I like that. I like how you framed it.
It's really
great
good.
Composition. Really nice.
What do you think of what did I come up with? Out of the Ordinary.
I like that.
Yeah. Let's try that.
Yeah.
Out of the Ordinary is the next assignment. See what people come up with.
Michelle, our friend at the National Gallery, sent something that I'd like to put in for here. I'm just going to paste this into Skype to see what you think of this for next week.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt if you had an idea already. We can do it next week.
No. This is a night. This is a discussion.
Conversation. Idea. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take.
Yeah. A look. Take a look at this. The title of the article is 37% of art museum visitors don't view them as culture.
What do they view them as?
I'm not going to tell you. You've got to dive into this a little bit, okay. and right. we can kind of continue offline and see. What you think.
We'll put it in the notes. I'll put it up for tomorrow or next week. Tomorrow, Tuesday, three days from now. Sounds good.
But I will say this: the top motivator. Don't even look at the article yet. But the top motivator for cultural participation. What is it?
FOMO.
What is that?
Fear of missing out.
Oh, no. Having fun.
Cultural appreciation is having fun.
Yeah.
I don't think that's outrageous. Oh, they want to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not crazy. I want to have fun when I'm involved in cultural stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll think about that one.
Yeah. So some interesting figures in here for this discussion. I think we could have some fun with it.
Okay. Photographer of the week this week. We talked a little bit about last week, but I think he deserves his own thing. Eugene Richards, who...
Yeah, good choice.
Whose work is documentary, largely black and white. He does some video stuff now. This guy's won a Guggenheim grant. He's won World Press Awards. He's won everything.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys from... He was Magnum at one point. He was... What's the other one? Seven or whatever the other one is. This guy is an absolute monster, and
the titles of his books, The Knife and Gun Club, Scenes from an Emergency Room.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Go look at like his stuff of the drug stuff where people are, syringes in their mouths as they're tying off and like
who was the oh my gosh, that documented the heroin culture back in the 70s. We talked about.
You sure it was heroin? It wasn't the Tulsa book?
Oh, maybe it was. Maybe it was Tulsa.
Which was actually amphetamines, but yeah.
Yep. Yep. My mistake. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Who was that?
What's the guy who did Kids? Oh my God. Why am I blanking on his name? His name is Larry Clark.
Larry Clark. Okay.
Right. It was similar to that, except Eugene was just shooting these guys as opposed to shooting up with these guys, which... it's a little bit
observer/participant. Yeah. That's the line.
Go look at the Guardian link that I put in there just as a quick little subset of images.
Hold on. Guardian. See, right. This is where show notes come in handy. The unflinching eye of Eugene Richards in pictures.
There's a handful of pictures down here. Like look at this shot of like them passing the crack pipe across, right?
Oh my gosh.
Or this nurse like looking with look at these the places he gets into, or the still has one of the kids inside the old car beat up like he's shooting from through the windshield. The little black kid holding the white doll head in Arkansas in 1970.
Yeah, like fantastic composition.
This guy is
oh my gosh. Oh, look at the one of the girl with the syringe in her. Oh gosh.
Yeah. Right.
Oh wow.
Yeah. You get it. Or. Look at the one a couple up from that where the guy who lost his hand in the war and he's like laughing with his like little kid, but he's got a hook hand.
Oh man.
I mean, this guy goes places in his mind and in reality that I don't want to go.
Yeah.
And it was,
I'm feeling a little Mary Ellen Mark in this stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of intimacy that
it
sort
is,
of,
but it's in my opinion, really dark.
It's dark.
I listened to this guy talk. There's also a video. There's a link in there to his website, a blog post. There's one called Faith in Winter, where he has this guy who's dying, who wrote a book of poetry that he wanted to get published before he died 6 months later. And so it's this guy reading them, plus some footage of these different things, plus this like just this video, just staring at the camera.
How he is accepted into these situations and subcultures? Does he talk about how he gets access?
He very much has a way about him that I think he just goes and talks to people. I mean, he talks about him and his wife, we're in a town and like met this guy who was like Ku Klux Klan or whatever at the diner. And then, they gave him his number or whatever it is. And the guy called him or something and said, hey, next time you're in town, come by. Like, I think, he's definitely at the point now where people who aren't high while he's taking pictures of them, probably could find out who he is and know that it's a big deal, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. But he goes and shoots people. Jeffrey, I listened to 45 minutes or an hour of this guy talking, showing his pictures, showing his videos, and I had to close my eyes at times because it was so upsetting. I mean, it was unnerving. Wow. Like him with people.
So wait, he was talking about this body of work?
He was talking about all, like, he showed a little bit of some of it, and then he kept showing these videos, and he had this video of this guy who was dying of a heart failure, who was like this white supremacist who used to like beat the crap out of black people because, and like, that's the way I fought. And I guess I'm sorry about it, but you know, I was young and beat the crap out of people, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, right. And he's sitting there like with fans on him cause he can't breathe without oxygen. And you're just sitting there and you're going, what, you know? And there was a guy that I met at the farm who, bandmate of mine, who Eugene Richards is sort of his hero. He's like his Dan Winters. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And I was like, how can this be what you, I mean, I get it. It's deep. It's whatever, but it's just so incredibly dark. And I said, have you had a lot of loss in your life? Because I was getting PTSD about, you know, watching people deteriorate around me and all this kind of stuff. And the guy was like, no, not really. And I was like, okay, so maybe he doesn't have that element of it, right? Where it's triggering his own personal stuff. So he just sees it as going really deep into other people's lives in a really rich way. And I take nothing away from Eugene Richards' work. It's incredible, but it's too much for me. Like, this is past the line from a photographic point of view.
Are you not able to see, and maybe this is something for next week too. Is there a point where certain types of photography, you're not able to see beyond the content to the technique or to the skill or to the...
Oh, I can see all of that stuff. He's just so good at it that you get... I mean, if you step back and go, wow, that's a... Every single thing that he put up on the screen, I was like, God, that's a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
And I was like, but it's of somebody about to die of cancer. I can't look at this right now.
At some point, you have to look away.
Yeah. And every single thing he showed, Jeffrey, was at that level of intensity. So it's, you kind of think to yourself, how do you live inside your own mind if you're this guy?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
how do you reconcile what you've seen with what you live?
How does he go to sleep at night?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's absolutely beautiful, and the guy deserves all of the stuff that he gets, but there's nothing light about any of it. There's no, he never shows real happiness, right? It's all just misery and sort of like, and I use this term a lot, and I don't know that it applies to him, but it almost feels like fetishizing misery. You know, it feels like I want to go down there and like live in this hole with these people who are dying. I was like, what are you doing? Like, no, maybe I just don't want to go there, or I'm not interested in that side of the world. I know it exists. It existing is bad enough. Wanting to go stay there when you don't have to is insanity to me.
But maybe there's something there where he can't feel like merely a passerby.
Yeah, maybe
like he has to feel like he is.
Yes, or maybe he's able to dissociate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know him well enough. I mean, he was there, and I talked to him for a second, but like, I didn't say this to him.
I would. You know what?
This is my own personal thing.
Would it be crazy to reach out to him and say, hey,
you certainly could. I would love to hear his answers to how he sees this stuff. Cause it is, I mean, again, he's won everything, you know, National Endowment for the Arts grants, Leica Medal of Excellence, Amnesty International Media Award. He's National Geographic Magazine grant. He's won the Robert F. Kennedy Lifetime Achievement Journalism Award, Lyndhurst Prize, Getty Images grant, World Press Photo Awards. I mean, this guy's a monster.
Yeah.
Like a living legend, and his work is amazing, but it's too much. It's too hot for me. You know, it's like going in and eating food that has way too much spice. It's like, yep, that's for somebody, but it's not for me. You know, anyway, right. Eugene Richards, go check it out if you dare.
Yeah. It's fantastic work. And again, I think there is a discussion in there about when we can no longer look at something as a photograph, our heart breaks and we have to look away.
Yeah.
Regardless of how good the work is.
Right. His stuff goes beyond the technique. It's not that I can't see the technique. That's what I see first. Cause it's amazing.
Right.
But then suddenly I'm like, get sucked into the subject of it. I'm just like, I can't, I just know. Too much.
I just know.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, great choice. Great choice.
So, yeah. So go Eugene check out Richards. Eugene Richards. He's a monster. If you want to get hold of us, 347-687-9411, you can send us a voicemail, which we always love to hear. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com, at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris, photographybytheletter.com, Wadman365 on Instagram. Anything else?
I don't think so. How far are you into this thing? Into your 365? Where are you at?
I have 60 something left. In fact, I need to.
Are you going to do another one after this, or are you going to take a break? What do you?
I'm 292. So I'm whatever 70.
We should talk about that.
78. Because
a little bit of what's next.
Yeah, I don't know yet, but what I need to do now that I'm like back from these trips and all the things that I had planned, now it's like, okay, now for the next 75, I want to make as many of them like, you know, planned out, thoughtful, whatever as I can, you know?
Right.
So I'm going to start.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot. All right. I'm looking at your website.
Yeah.
When is Moon coming
when
out?
When are the dream stuff's going to come out?
When is Moon coming out?
Hopefully in the next week or two. I want to go take a last look at it to see if I can get that last one done. There are 9 of them I thought I want. There's a 10th that I want to finish. But
you know, 10's for suckers, Bill. Put out 9.
Yeah, maybe
nobody puts out 10 pictures. All the cool kids put out 9, Bill. Come on.
Yeah. In the next, couple weeks, I want to get that done. In fact, I want to sell some prints for Christmas. Because I think a lot of these
or at least replace the teaser. Give us another teaser, man.
Okay. All right. I'll get around to it. I got to update my website. I got to go through the, 600 pictures I took on my trip, and collate them and edit them.
Now final question.
Yeah.
Based on your experience with the 100T,
would I buy one?
Would you consider buying a 100F? As a travel camera.
Yes. Actually, you know what I'm actually considering buying is the X70 or 70X. What is the X70? That's the little 28 millimeter
viewfinder, right?
No viewfinder. And it's a 28 millimeter equivalent lens. So a little wider.
Okay, so you're a little tighter.
No, wider. It's 28. It's 18.5. 28. Oh, it's equivalent. 18.
Okay. Okay. 28
as opposed to 35 equivalent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Which is I really like that focal length.
Yeah.
And it costs less and it's a little faster and it's got a tilting lens with the new version of it.
Wait, and, still smaller sensor. Still the
it's so APS-C.
Same sensor as the S that you used.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still the 16 megapixel, but like for trips and stuff like that, it's fine for a pocket camera. It's great. So it's basically
half the price too. Wow.
Yeah, it's only like $700. You can get them like for $500 used. So like if I was going to get a pocket camera, that's probably what I'd get. It's basically like the GR2 Ricoh.
Oh yeah, except, the Ricoh, sure. Yeah.
Except with much better JPEG engine built in. You know what I mean? Because I like the X-Trans look and I like the film simulation. So if I'm going to do it, I'd probably go for that.
Right.
So anyway, so yeah, that's probably what I'd go for because it's cute and it's little. And so I do like the Fujis. And if I can get one of these cheap, the problem is I don't need it that often. Although I did enjoy having a nice camera in my pocket or around my neck. Although I forgot that it was there. I forgot that it was around my neck so much because it was so little and light. I'd be like, wait, where's the camera? Oh, phew.
Oh, yeah. You know? There it is.
Yeah. All right. Till Tuesday. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah. We'll see you in a few days. Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry the show was late, but as you can hear,
you got a good long
one. Yeah, it was worth it. See you next week.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. The way I have for too long. this way. Say what you want to say. I know what you will say will leave me out. But I should hear it say.